Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of June 10th. Wow, it's already June 10th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a rainy Sunday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Wow, I'm John. Isn't June 10th came awfully early this year.
Somebody changed the calendar.
Yeah, I mean, normally it comes after 9, but I think somebody, yeah, did
normally it came
maybe I got a,
comes
I,
after
I,
9.
They were distributing joke calendars or something, which would be really a mean thing to do to me because I'm, in addition to being really bad with numbers, which is why I have a computer, I'm like the world's worst person with days and dates and times. So if somebody were to, I swear, if somebody were to give me a calendar that had June 10th as the second day in the month,
I would
totally believe it. I was thinking, wow, the year is different this year. Okay.
Well, that gives me an idea of what to give you on your birthday next year.
Just don't give it to me on March 16th, because then I'll figure it out.
Hey, but you know what? I thought the rainy season had started today, so I actually went to the umpires and requested a video review, but the umpires said they couldn't tell.
Are we going there? Okay.
No, but let's go on with the show. How's that? On this week's show, we've got a chat with Brandon Laird of Lotte. We're going to discuss the Marines, the first week of interleague play. We're going to look at some numbers and deal with some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so on Friday, I went to Tokyo Dome, and I had lunch with NPB Card Guy. He's a longtime listener, Dave from Baltimore, longtime listener and friend of the program, and had a great time with him. And he gave us, you and I, a really thoughtful gift, which was Wayne Grosick's first fan guidebook. And I tweeted out the pictures, and Dave, thank you very much again. It was very, very thoughtful of you to bring those all the way from the I don't know how you got them. He told me how he got them, and I was so stunned. I don't think I heard a word he said because I was touching these books, and they're like almost in mint condition. They're really, really nice. So I got one for you next time I see you, bud. So
cool.
Thanks again,
and
Dave.
Then, and of course, then the funny thing was on Saturday I was leaving Jingu to go to my office. Somebody waves, says, "Hey, Jim," as I'm going into the Jingu guy in my subway station. And it's Dave, whom I recognized, of course, from your Facebook picture. Your picture on Facebook.
Right.
And so he says, "Jim, I saw John yesterday." I said, "I know."
Yeah, and then one of you guys tweeted that out, right? Or both of you guys.
He tweeted, and you reacted
to it. So, yeah. But, yeah, very, very nice to see him. And I think it had been 6 years since we met up at Tokyo Dome, so we had a little reunion there because you had met him before. We all, I think it was after a WBC game that we all hooked up. So anyway, then I went inside and I sat down with Brandon Laird of Lotte, and he's a slugger in his fifth year in MPV. He spent the first four with the Fighters. Now he's with the Marines, moved there in the offseason as a free agent. And you know, that first year with the Fighters, he struggled mightily in that first half, and I think it was even more than the first half, but he did hit with power while he seemed to struggle with getting his average up, and he played strong defensively. That allowed him to stay in the lineup, and he has been a mainstay in Japan since. And he got off to a really strong start this season, has helped Lotte with the lack of power, although, well, we'll get into a little bit more about the Lotte Marines a little bit later, but Brandon has a team-high 17 home runs. He's tied with a couple others. I still think he's tied. I looked at the numbers, in fact, the home run numbers on Saturday, so I didn't update them today. I had a busy day with the family today, so give me a break. But he's... Thank you. He's right behind Hotaka Yamakawa. I shouldn't say right behind because Hotaka is just nuts. What did they say? Last time I saw Pro Yaku News and they said he's on pace to hit 65 home runs. I think he had a day off of home runs. So, but anyway, good luck catching him. Nobody's right behind him, but Brandon's got a normal slugger's figure for his home run, so I think he's happy with that first so far with what he's done up until June 9th. He talked about in this chat, we talked about a lot of things, including the fact that he's excited to play in the Central League ballpark. So let's take a listen.
side. We're sitting on the Lotte side of the Tokyo Dome bench. That sounds weird to say because, you know, you're on the road here, but it's interleague play. But we're sitting with Brandon Laird. How you doing, man?
Good. Glad to be back.
Great to see you again. Glad you're back in Japan. The last time we talked, we didn't know where you were going and what was going on, and here you are.
Yeah, I mean, it was a crazy off season, you know, but you know, I'm here now with Chiba and, you know, just having a good season and, you know, new team, fresh start. So, you know, I'm having a lot of fun.
Well, how did that end up being at Chiba of all teams?
they came in at, you know, last, you know, I was just hearing things, you know, this team likes you, but, you know, nobody came forward. So, you know, we waited and waited and, you know, Chiba stepped up and, you know, I'm just happy to be a part of the, you know, this team.
All right, now we saw you foul a ball off your left foot last night. It looked real painful. Ah, how you doing?
I'm doing better today. Last night, not so much. You know, I wear a guard, but, you know, those things don't really help that much.
You mean it hit the guard, but it didn't do enough guarding?
Yeah, it felt like I didn't even have one on. You know, I haven't done that in a while, but I'm just glad, you know, everything came back and, you know, the x-rays were negative and, you know, I'm in the lineup tonight, so.
Okay, awesome. Now, when you change teams like this and you change in the same league, what's your attitude going into a new locker room?
You know, I feel like I've had a good relationship with these guys because I got to play against them for 4 years. You know, I just, you know, my same attitude that I always have. You know, I just want to, you know, be a good teammate, have fun, you know, make sure the guys are having fun, joking around, and, you know, just perform well. And, you know, this year I feel like you know, I've been doing a good job of that.
Now, I heard before from another player that when you change teams, that team kind of tells you how they went about trying to get you out and your approach is. Okay, so when you came here, what did the kind of things that you can tell us that that they asked you to work on?
They didn't really ask me to work on anything. You know, they just said, you know, we know what you can do. You know, just want you to hit home runs, drive in runs. You know, they weren't sure where I was going to play defensively. Because, you know, you got Yasuda, young prospect, and Daichi played there last year. But, you know, I just worked hard there. That's my position. And, you know, I've been there every day, you know, since the beginning. So, you know, but I did talk to the pitchers and, you know, saying, you know, why you guys throw me so many breaking balls or why don't you pitch to me? And, you know, they just laugh. You know, they just say you're a dangerous hitter. And, you know, it just, I mean, it kind of shows a lot, you know, that, you know, they don't want to pitch to me. So kind of respect thing.
So that scouting process does take place, though. The team talks to you about what they were doing in terms of trying to get you out as an opponent?
I mean, definitely. Because it's only going to help me, you know, going in to face other teams. You know, also our pitching coach, Yoshi, I was with him in the Fighters.
Right.
And when we played against the Hawks a couple years ago, you know, I'm like, hey, Yoshi, you know, like, off this guy, you know, what was the report? You know, he would say, oh, you know, show you this, maybe throw you this. And so it definitely helps and, you know, it gives me kind of an idea or game plan going into the game.
Okay, excellent. Now, to what do you attribute the good start that you got off to? Because you, in our opinions, you should have been the player of the month for, you know, March, April.
I mean, first of all, I'm healthy. You know, last year I missed almost a month in my oblique. You know, I trained hard this off season and got back in, you know, shape and, you know, made sure I was healthy. And also, you know, I had a son. So, you know, I definitely feel like, you know, that's the biggest reason. And, you know, it's just a new fresh start, new team. And, you know, it just feels good. So.
All right. Yeah. Young Sebastian Kai. You spell that K-A-I?
Yeah.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So what have you learned about the stadium out there at Chiba that you didn't really know before as a visitor? I know they changed it with the lagoon, too.
I mean, I love that. but honestly, you know, over the last couple of years, we redid the lights and the turf. And, you know, I honestly feel it used to be my least favorite place to hit. And now it's honestly my favorite. You know, the lagoon definitely helps and gives you a little more confidence, especially with that wind in Chiba. You know, but the fans are amazing. I've always enjoyed playing there, and now playing there as a home team, you know, they pump you up, and, you know, they're in it the whole game, and it kind of like, you know, I feel like it helps you a lot.
Yeah, I love the fans. I honestly call them the best fans in Japan.
Yeah, me too.
Them and Yokohama, because especially with Yokohama, when you're not winning, going out there and go. But these teams, these fans in Chiba are superb. Yeah, second to none.
Yeah, I mean, you know, baseball is a game of failure. So, you know, not everything's going to go your way all the time. But, when you got fans like ours that are constantly cheering for you and wanting you to do great, I mean, you keep your confidence up. You know, they don't really, you feel like you're not even struggling, you know, when you really are. So, you know, it's awesome.
All right, now the Marines got off to a strong start, and I think with you and some other guys hitting for power, they tried to identify that. You guys are hitting some home runs, but still you guys are in the middle of the pack in terms of run scored.
Yeah.
Why is that in your opinion?
I mean, that's baseball. You know, we're just not getting those timely hits right now. I mean, if you look at the standings, I feel like, you know, everybody's bunched up. You know, it's like a few games apart, so... you know, I feel like we've been playing good baseball, just things aren't going our way. You know, I know they're going to change, and hopefully we can have a good interleague and, you know, get back, you know, hot in the regular season.
No doubt you guys are going to have a good interleague because you're playing the Central League. All right, so now you went to the mound on Thursday night to talk to the inexperienced starter, Atsuki Taneishi.
Yeah.
Now, what did you say to him at that point?
I just, you know, told him to relax, and, you know, everything's fine, and... You know, just just try your best, but you know, just relax. You know, sometimes I feel like these young guys, they try to overdo it, you know, a little bit. You know, overthrow and you know, try to throw their forkball a little too hard. When really, you know, you just throw it. You know, it's your best pitch. Just, you know, throw it how you always throw. You know, let it work. You know, I just wanted to go out there and calm down, give them a little confidence, and so hopefully I did.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because this is your first year with the club, and he's a guy you probably don't even know that well.
Yeah.
And that stuff is usually reserved for Suzuki because he's the captain. So what made you decide to take that initiative?
I just look at it as like when I was in the States, you know, the older guys came up to the young guys and helped us out, you know, because they've been there for a little bit. I mean, I have 5 years. I consider myself a veteran here, you know, a little bit. I don't even know I'm a foreigner, but if I can go to the mound and, you know, just say a couple words that, you know, help him relax or just even give him a breath, you know, just take a couple seconds just to regain his composure and, you know, move on to the next hitter, you know, whatever I can to do to help him.
All right, last one now. I know I've talked to you a lot of times. It always seems to be around this time of year. It always seems to be around this time of year. How do you like interleague, and what's the high point and the low point of it?
I like the interleague because you get to play in the small stadiums. you know, and also just get to play against the other leagues, so I think it's cool. See the other fans and stuff. The low is, I mean, I don't really see these pitchers that much, so, you know, I'm not really, you know, familiar with them that much. I mean, we play them once a year, but, you know, it's not like I'm facing, you know, them every other, you know, series like in the other league, so that's the only thing. But, you know, if I stay with my approach that I've been having this year, you know, I think I'll be just fine.
All right, we'll be watching you. Good luck.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, appreciate the time.
All right, thank you.
And get some sleep.
Yeah, I know.
All right, Bud. Thanks a lot for sitting down with us. Really appreciate it. So
yeah, I'm gonna have to make some time because it seems like I've seen you at the ballpark now about at least three times this year, and all we've been able to do is say wave and say hi and shake hands. And I'll get to you. And I'm getting to him, like, you know, it's almost like I'm a vampire because it hasn't happened yet. I don't think he's happy about it, but I'm saying it's like something that we haven't been able to make happen.
Right, right. So. Well, I did get to say hello to Brandon Mann, whom you interviewed earlier this year for the show, and you've interviewed him before when he was with Yokohama. And so I got to meet him for the first time, and I said hello. And then I saw Josh Raven, who had come up from the farm team, and he and Alex... Guerrero of the Giants were hugging each other and like, you know, trying to have a conversation. And I'm like, what are these guys doing? And then I realized both of those guys played in the Dodgers organization together.
Oh.
So they were real tight. So I figured it out and I went up to Josh and I said, hey, nice to meet you. I was trying to figure out what you were doing with Alex and I put two and two together. So that was good. That was a good reunion to see. So it was fun. But anyway, in terms of the talk, what stayed with you after you listened to it?
Well, quite a bit. I mean, it's always a joy to listen to Brandon because he's always so positive. And the interesting thing for me is, you know, asking if you're going to ask the Marines, you know, what should I do or what shouldn't I do when I come here? They're probably the answer is just make sure you stay in this uniform and are not hitting against our pitchers. because he was more successful against Lotte than he was against any other Pacific League team with the Fighters. He hit 27 home runs. He had 56 runs scored, which was tops among all the Pacific League teams. Had a 348 on base percentage and a 540 slug. And this is against a team. And now, mind you, I mean, those aren't really atrocious. Those aren't really great numbers. But this is a guy who was playing, A, for the Nippon Ham Fighters in a very bad home run park.
Mm-hmm.
Against a team, the Lotte Marines, who had a very bad home run park.
Right.
So he was really actually killing them. He was actually really, those numbers are like...
nobody knew it yet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm just saying that if you put up those numbers and all your... And, well, of course, they play games at... The Fighters also play games at Tokyo Dome.
Uh-huh. And,
which
and
jacks up the numbers a bit.
And some of the regional games up in Hokkaido a couple a year.
But a couple a year. Against the Marines, I don't know. But I'm just saying that essentially.
Well, in 4 years, yeah, I would imagine a couple. But
anyway, I'm just saying 90% of the Fighters, not 90%, about 75% of the Fighters' home games are at Sapporo Dome, which is the worst home run park in the Pacific League, and all of his road games against the Marines were at Chiba Marine Stadium, Zozo Marine Field or QVC Stadium or, you know, whatever
you want to call it. Yeah,
exactly. Whatever you want to call .com stadium. And that was the second hardest home run park in the Pacific League. So to have a 540 slug there and to have his best home run production there is saying something.
Especially when he said he hated hitting there before. That's surprising.
Okay, in 50 games before he joined the Marines, although he killed them in Sapporo, I'm guessing he killed them in Sapporo and at Tokyo Dome.
Right.
But he played 50 games in road games against the Marines, and all their road games are in Chiba.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a 249 average. He hit 9 home runs in 50 games.
Not bad.
Not just not bad, but he hit a, you know, his average was okay, but yeah, his slugging average, he basically hit no doubles, so his slugging average was 323. So it was really bad, so to have that total against the Marines, have those home runs at Sapporo Dome was pretty impressive.
And the fact that now he said that, and I think it's a big deal that he said they changed the lighting. When he said that, my eyebrows kind of went up because I had visions of Dan Johnson. Remember him with the Oklahoma Bay Stars?
Yes, the Asahi beer sign that he didn't like.
In center field, and said he couldn't hit. So I know that sometimes these things can be a distraction for guys who are batting at particular stadiums. And so when he said they changed the lighting, and I know they've always made changes ever since, you know, the Bobby Valentine years, it seems like they make changes to the stadium, try to freshen it up in the off season each year. And so that sounded like a big deal to me in terms of that.
Can be, for sure. I certainly recall 2011 when they had the reduced lighting.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, they weren't allowed to play night games in the Kanto area until the end of April in 2011 after the earthquake because of the the power shortage caused by the meltdowns in Fukushima Prefecture.
Yikes,
then, right, so it was a huge difference, first half, second half, because they were allowed to go to full lighting in the second half of the season. And then the following year, Tokyo, a lot of the parks started changing to LED lights.
Mm, okay,
and I know
I did not
the Giants
remember that. Yeah.
One drove people nuts because the lights were so bright. In fact, I know some of the hitters, I think they changed the arrangement because in the spring of the 2012, hitters were saying that the bright lights in the outfield were annoying.
Huh.
Or maybe it was the outfielders seeing the bright lights behind home plate and then losing balls or something. But I know it was. So the lighting is hugely important.
Right, and we see that Brand is batting .327 now at this year at Zozo with 10 home runs and 25 RBIs.
Yeah, but Brandon batting .327. And anyway, so I was just curious because I remembered him really hitting above his weight in the second half of the season.
What year?
In 2015.
Okay.
Because fighter scout Mount Winters was afraid he might lose his job because he had signed Brandon Laird, and he was hitting under 200 on July 1st with 9
right.
home runs.
I think I remember you mentioning that on the show that year.
Sure. And then the second half of the season, Brandon hit .277 with 22 home runs.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, much better.
Yeah, indeed, much better. And it speaks to a lot of things that happened. And actually, Randy Smith, former Tigers and San Diego Padres general manager, who now works for the Fighters, has a dual role with the Fighters and the Texas Rangers. And he told me that the Fighters are kind of a unique organization. He said it's hard to imagine any other team in Japan, although I think the Swallows and the Carp might do it. It's hard to imagine a lot of MPB teams sticking with a guy who hit 190, a power hitter who hit 199 with 9 home runs through half a season.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think when I interviewed him at the time, I said, you know, a lot of guys come to Japan, and if they had struggled like you have struggled, of course, like I said, he played good defense and he hit with power enough. I said, but a lot of guys get sent to the farm, and they have not sent you to the farm. And I think in that interview, that first year, that he said, well, the Fighters keep telling me they have faith in me. They have, they know what I can do, and they want to make everything easy for me to play and perform in the environment. And so they're making the environment as player friendly as they can for me. And they said it'll come around. And I think he talked about going to have sushi at some point and having a chat with somebody, and then things just turned around for him. So I remember all that stuff, yeah, from 2015.
Wow. But, yeah, I think that was interesting. So the bit about, you know, what should I not do or what should I do? And my answer was just keep doing like you're doing.
But
it was interesting. I thought the comments about Yoshi were kind of interesting. And I think the other one that I kind of liked was, was the bit where he said, didn't know what position I'd play. Because as he pointed out, Daichi Suzuki had just moved from short to third.
Exactly. Yasuda, you know, yeah.
And so they're all over the place. The Marines infield is kind of a work in progress, right? It's fairly fluid. So that was kind of interesting. And he's one of the parts that's immovable. So that's kind of interesting. And of course, the final thing was, I thought, a wonderful question about going to the mound to talk to the pitcher.
Oh.
And Tanichi.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great answer. But it caught me because I read something the other day, and I want to say it was Sports Illustrated. It might not have been. About the treatment. Now, hear a little bit about this next week because I was chatting with somebody about this. For American players come to Japan and they talk about how seniority-based Japan is. Like, it's such a bad thing. It should be merit, and everything should be merit-based.
Right.
You know, it should be. And then I'm reading this story, and I believe it was SI.com, about how regimented and how arbitrary and abusive the MLB clubhouse culture is based on service time seniority.
Wow.
It's like, you've only been here 2 years, don't you dare sit in that chair.
Or, yeah, don't open your mouth.
Exactly.
Except to put food in it.
and I'm going, exactly. I mean, it's like these people coming out of that culture and they're complaining that there's seniority in Japan. I'm going, come on, you know, don't be so hypocritical. But I think what happens is it's seniority on a different dimension, on different planes. But, you know, it's still people are people.
Right.
You've been around a long time, you want to get some deference.
Yeah, well, so. I do think you pointed something out there in that answer that he said. Well, I feel like I've been here long enough. You know, I've earned the right to go and visit a guy, and I'm like,
yeah.
Of course, my thought was, of course, you never remember. I said it a long time ago on the show. I don't know how many people remember, but I never tell people who are nervous to calm down or not to be nervous. I don't remind them that they're nervous. So that's like, for me, that's like, don't say relax to the guy who's not going to relax. And so I say, hey, I would go to the mountain and say, hey, I know you can do it. You know, I just pump up their confidence a little bit, but I wouldn't mention the N word. Do what you usually do. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was great because I think your point is really, really good because it shows why Brandon Laird's been in Japan for 5 years. One of the reasons, it's not only the home run.
Mm-hmm.
It's that I felt I had enough seniority to be as positive as I wanted to be.
Yep. Yep. And
that's, you know, that goes a long way. Japanese baseball will, I can think of a couple of players who stayed a fairly long time, even though they were jerks.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty rare.
Yeah. The other thing that you know, when I was sitting there and I thought, this is a really, really interesting response to this question. And that was when I asked him about, you know, the self-scouting that he would have to do because the Marines told him, you know, we tried to do this with you and whatever, because I think we had a question earlier on, somebody on Twitter asked why Brandon Laird was doing so well. And I said, well, a lot of times there's a self-scouting process that takes place when you change teams, whether the new team tells you this is what we did to get you out, or this is what we did to attack you, or our approach if you're a pitcher. And but I just found it interesting that he said, he referenced most of the pitchers. You know, you said Yoshii, but I think, you know, Yoshii told him some things, but he came over with Yoshii from the Fighters. Yoshii had joined. And I have a story about Yoshii. I went up to him before the game, and I went to say hello and, seeing you the first time with the Marines uniform on. And I looked under the cap, and I saw a lot more gray hair. And I said, hey, what's up with that? And he took his cap off, and he was so gray. And he said, I stopped dyeing my hair. I had no idea. I haven't seen him without his cap the whole season. So I had no idea. And I was trying to tease him, and he just flipped the cap off and said, you can't tease me. It's all gray, bud. And it was pretty white. Anyway, I don't know how much Yoshii was telling him about his situation, but it seemed interesting to me that the pitchers on the team were giving him a lot of information. We used to throw you this, that, and the other. And he asked him, hey, how come you throw me so many breaking balls?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think? We're just going to let you hit home runs?
Like, more cookies, please.
Okay. Well, speaking of cookies, let's talk about the Marines, because they've been serving some up or something, because they're in fifth place in the Pacific League. And, you know, I think things are bunched up, so it's not like they're out of the running or anything, or, you know, the fans should panic. But I just feel like they're underachieving, because I have them finishing in the playoffs. That was my prediction. So I feel like they're underachieving. So, again, hats off to Zach Ikuma, who in the prediction show said that probably they're going to have a little bit of an issue with their rotation, but they've got more issues than just the rotation. So, and one of them is Kenneth Vargas, the switch hitting slugger,
yeah,
who I think they figured would have had more than 84 at bats by this time in the season, unless he had been injured, and he just didn't. He struggled to find any consistency with contact and hard contact, so he's gone. I think the bright spot is Takashi Ogino, who's basically having a breakout season in his 10th year here. I think he's the best center fielder in the Pacific League, and sometimes it just takes some guys a lot longer. So he's a late bloomer, but he's really contributing.
Well, yeah, he's a difficult case, because this is a guy, and in 2010, this is a guy who threw the first 6 weeks of the season was a player. He was the most exciting player to come to NPB since Ichiro Suzuki became a regular in 1994.
Okay.
I mean, this guy was, he may be at that time as a rookie, he may have been the fastest player to ever have played in NPB.
Yeah, I heard about a lot of stuff, but I never, I mean, he just never, yeah.
He was amazing. I mean, if he made contact, it's like the infield panic.
And here's the other thing is when he came up, I think they had Yoshifumi Okada in center field. He wasn't much of a hitter, but he was a plus defensive player. Not the greatest arm, but he had so much range. He would always make these crazy plays. And, you know, I heard a lot about him, but I know that essentially,
we got hurt
however it happened.
Yeah, well, he got hurt on May 21st, and he was like, I think he had stolen at that point, he had 26 stolen bases or 22 stolen bases, and he hadn't been caught.
And this is 2010.
Yes.
So that they were both on the team. So, and anyway, however it happened, Okada ended up getting more of the time in center field because he was just such an elite defensive player. In terms of range, I don't think his arm was that great, but...
Ogino basically had about four or five knee surgeries.
Yeah, or has had through the years, or had
it
right?
It was like one after another. They tried to play him in 2011, he came back, and they tried to play him at shortstop. And that really didn't work.
He's
not nearly as fast. He had that explosive, he had sprinter speed.
Well, you don't need to be if you're able to hit, you know. Before he was like slap and run, but now he can actually hit. It seems like he's a much better hitter. Yeah.
My point is that actually he's become a very good base stealer. I mean, he used to be a base stealer, I think, because he was just blazing fast, and now he actually knows how to steal bases.
And so he's a mainstay in center field for them right now. But I've seen some problems. I've seen a lot of guys play in left and a lot of guys play in right, and none of them have played very well. They've been okay, and I think that's something that Tadahito Iguchi has to do as the manager. He's got to mix and match and find out what the most favorable matchup is, and hope that some of these players can come through. But they just haven't. I mean, I've seen Ikuhiro Kiyota has been hot lately, but he, I think, started the season on the farm. And Katsuya Kakunaka has been dealing with injuries. He finally got back, but he has been basically not the guy we've grown accustomed to seeing. And he's an average outfielder defensively on a good day. And, you know, Daichi Suzuki, like you said, he started the season without a position, really, coming out of camp. And he's been such a great offensive force. I think Iguchi has to find a place to play him. And so that we know he's not a great defensive player, but he's got to be on the field if you want to have his bat. He's really not a DH, although they can do it. I think there was one game that I saw at least one this season, maybe, that he was the DH. And then there's the curious case of Seiya Aja Inoue, who is gaining strides this year, but I think he's at the age where you either look at him and say, okay, this is a guy like Kazuhiro Hatakeyama, and we're going to keep him on the team, but we're not going to try to build around him and think he's going to be a mainstay in the middle of the lineup for a while.
I don't think, given his body type, you really don't expect him to have
get stuck on big, don't you?
Hashtag high heat.
My wife talking about me.
A very Girthian comment right there, yes.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that he's not the guy with a physique that you expect to physically improve. Having said that, he could dramatically remake his body and prolong his career and prolong his productivity, but He appears to be the kind of player who really doesn't age well.
Right,
he's 28 or 20. He's
29. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Pushing 30, and he's got these old player skills to begin with. You know, the high on base percentage, high slugging average. Keep him while you got him, and get ready to replace him.
Right. Now, before we started taping, you were talking about their position by position kind of production.
Oh, OPS, yeah, from their starting position players, how they rank. The number one in OPS in the Pacific League. In fact, the number one OPS in Japan at third base is Brandon Laird. Well, primarily Brandon Laird. The Marines third baseman ranked number one. The Marines DH's rank two are ranked second in the Pacific League.
Correct.
And then they've got good production from third first base, which is first base, which is Seiya Inoue, and from center field, which is Takashi Ogino, and from right field, which is a combination of people. Those are all better than average. The downside is really shortstop, where they've got a 5.33 OPS from their starting shortstops, which is, in sort of traditional terms, is a 209 batting average, a 259 on-base percentage.
Yeah, that's another area of problem. But they had the injury. I mean, Fujioka got injured, and Taiga Hirasawa, you know, they want to make him the shortstop at some point, I think, but he hasn't been able to put things together there. So they've got issues. They've got issues. Yeah. But one of the other issues we talked about, which was something that I mentioned to Brandon, they've identified and I think they've addressed the power situation, but they're still maybe middle of the pack in terms of scoring runs. And you said they're basically unlucky. And
no,
I guess that's the only thing we can figure out.
That's not what I said.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm mischaracterizing your statement. Go ahead.
What I said is this. Essentially, NPB teams hit, NPB players in general hit 250, so far this season, are hitting 251. NPB is hitting 251.
Okay.
They're hitting like 253 with runners in scoring position.
The Marines are?
No.
NPB. All players are NPB. Okay.
So basically, that's what you expect.
Okay.
Basically, teams generally are going to hit about as well with runners in scoring position, maybe a little better. But so what I'm saying is, when you have a team that hits, you know, 238 like the Marines, and saying they don't hit with runners in scoring position, it's like saying, you know, you bought a Volkswagen, but it's not as fast as your Ferrari. Because they shouldn't be hitting with runners in scoring position, is what I'm saying. I mean, given what they hit, you wouldn't expect them to hit well. They hit better than they should. So what I'm saying is they haven't been really lucky. And maybe that's their problem, is they haven't. I'm not saying they're unlucky. I'm saying they're luckier than they should be. But they haven't been really lucky.
All right.
Does that make sense to you?
I'm
not saying they're unlucky, because you know, they shouldn't be hitting as well as they are with runners in scoring position.
Right, they're hitting a little bit higher than their team average.
Exactly.
In that respect. So, but they're not driving in runs.
Right.
So
to say that they are unlucky is, I think, egregious. I'm saying that they certainly could be luckier. You know, they could be hitting 270 with runners in scoring position. It would be outrageously lucky, and they'd score more runs. But, you know, that's like saying I'm not able to pay my bills because I didn't win the lottery yesterday.
Okay. All right. Well, so, I'm not sure I follow that.
It's ridiculous to assume this team is going to score more runs.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're not. I'm looking at the fact that they're not. And, you know, starting pitching has also been a weak point for this team. And I think, you know, we saw a little bit of it today. Ayumu Ishikawa didn't have a particularly good day against the Giants, and he really hasn't been good.
He's been inconsistent.
In a season, yeah. I think he hasn't been good since 2017.
Toilet time.
Right. Toilet time. Don't say that. I got toddlers here, so.
Okay, apologize. Don't encourage them.
Yeah, because they just like to sit there and, you know, play. So, a few injuries and ineffectiveness. We've seen him just turn into a different guy. Mike Bolsinger.
He's been up and down. I mean, he's had really good games. He was coming off three really good games.
Yeah.
And then, okay.
Not so much. Yeah, well, not today. Mike Bolsinger hasn't been able to find whatever gave him success here last season. So he has dealt with some injury issues as well. So those two guys in particular, and they've just been bringing out guys here and there. Taniichi, we talked about Brandon going to the mound to talk to him. He's a young, you know, not a first-year player, but a young player. I think he qualifies as a rookie, right? Let me look that up as I talk. He is one of the young guys they've been giving opportunities to, and he came through one time. I mean, you're going to get inconsistencies with these young guys, sure. And that just goes with the territory. I think Chihaya Sasaki is somebody we expected to see at some point this year, and we're not seeing him out there. So I just think they've got issues with the pitching as well, and their bullpen has actually been pretty good. In fact, at early on, they were the guys out there were leading MPB and ERA and pitching really well. But I mean, the more
the rookie I like on the pitching staff is Daiki Iwashita, and I do not believe Nishiba is a rookie.
Okay, yeah, I know. I think he was a third year pitcher, but he hasn't pitched much, but. Either way, he's certainly inexperienced on this level, and they've just got problems all over the field. So I hope they can get it together, and like I said, all the standings wise, they're bunched together. Maybe they can put something together here.
I guess a good thing, you know, Brandon Mann has come back after he had one start early in the season. Right after I talked to him, of course, he got shelled, which is what happens when people talk to me. And he came back the other this week, and he had three sparkling innings of relief, and he had two today, which one was not sparkling. one was I'm lucky to be alive, but no runs, and then the second was a 1-2-3 inning against the Giants. So he's gone five. Since he's come back, he's got five scoreless innings, which looks good on your resume.
Right, always does.
Yep. Yeah. So good luck. Good going there.
All right. Well, good luck to them. I like I said, it's not over, and I see them making some kind of run somehow. Oh, of course it's not over. It's only June, but it doesn't. With that messed up calendar we have, it doesn't feel like June.
Yeah,
plus it's
exactly.
Cold outside.
Indeed. Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jim Allen. If you enjoy the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, you'll probably like jballallen.com too. Jballallen.com is full of writing, research, and news related to the game I've been covering for more than 25 years. Now, any subscriber who writes and tells me he heard about the website on this podcast will get an additional month added to the regular 2-month subscription. Thanks for your support.
Now, we want to make a two-seam transition and talk about some numbers. And I remember you talking earlier this season about the number of outs on the bases. So I've been watching that. But I also kept thinking about the double play numbers that we've talked about in the past. And the other day, I think it was during a run, I was wondering because I noticed that the Dragons put a lot of runners on base. And I was wondering, when you figure out your numbers, these double play numbers, do you look at the number of ground balls that they don't turn into the double plays, or do you look at the number of base runners and then consider
question.
That they have an opportunity to have a double play?
That's a good question. One, I look at, I look what I can look at. So the first part is a count, which is the number of times there's a runner on first base with less than two outs.
Correct. So you have an opportunity to turn a double play.
Yeah. Now the next one is I can also look at how many ground balls are hit in those situations. I can count the ground because I can count the ground ball out.
Okay.
That leaves the other part of the equation, which are ground balls that aren't out. And I basically do an estimate of based on how many ground ball outs versus fly ball outs, and I'll basically add that to singles.
Okay.
So and I'll apply that to singles. So let's say a team gets 60% of their outs are on the ground. I'll say 60% of the singles that go into the infield singles and outfield singles will be ground balls that got through the infield. And would therefore be potential double play. So I'm going to basically make an estimate of how many bowls they've had to turn double play. So
gotcha. And that was even easy for me to understand. So thank you. So what do you have? Who
amazing.
That's amazing. Okay. So who are the leaders, and then who have the fewest? So give us top three and bottom three.
Top three. The the defensive ground bowl double play champs right now are the Hanshin Tigers, which I know isn't going to come as a surprise to anybody.
Not at all.
Following the Tigers, 11.5% of the time they have a ground ball, basically a ground ball hit in a double play situation. They're turning a double play.
Wow.
It doesn't seem like a big number, and actually there's not a lot of separation, which is kind of surprising, but I think that's because the players really aren't that different in skill level.
Okay, that makes sense.
So 11.5% for the Tigers. Number two is the Nippon Ham Fighters at 11%. And number three is the Yomiuri Giants at 10.9%.
Wow.
Okay. The median is for the... for NPB is about 9%. Okay, now the bottom three are the number 10 in NPB are the Hiroshima Carp.
Huh, that's surprising.
Indeed.
That's surprising.
The Carp defense has been going in that direction for a couple of years now.
What's their number?
8%.
Eight. Flat. Well, you said there wasn't a big difference. I see that as a big difference. Yeah,
well,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's all relative, but yeah.
Yeah, 10%. Thanks, Einstein. 10% less than the norm, okay, or 10% of the norm. And then the Bay Stars at 7.3%. And and then, of course, not a real big surprise when you consider who their second baseman and shortstops are, the Rakuten Eagles at the 7% flat bottom in NPB.
Wow.
Just in case you're curious, the teams that are the hardest to double up, the team that in NPB is the hardest to double up. Any guesses?
It hits the fewest home runs. I'm sorry, it hits the fewest double plays. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Hits into the fewest
balls,
double plays.
Yeah, essentially among ground balls, yeah.
Well, if the Dragons didn't have Diane Viciedo, who is leading MPB in double plays, I would say it's them, because the other guys don't hit into that many, but he is leading. So it's got to be another team, probably the Lions.
Correct. The Lions, the team, probably the fastest team in MPB. So.
Well, fastest in terms of, basically, but they also hit the ball in the air a lot. that's my impression. That's why. That's why I went with them.
The number of ground balls they have.
Yeah.
So because they have fly balls, that cuts down on the number of chances. That cuts down on the number of potential chances for digging. I'm taking this as a percentage of them.
Right. Well, I'm glad I got that right. Woohoo!
Okay. So the Lions and Buffaloes and Dragons are the hardest. Three hardest teams to double up in that order, and the easiest team to double up is the Bay Stars.
Oh yes,
number two is the Giants, and number three are the Eagles.
All right. Okay. All right. Excellent. See, I like giving you these assignments because you do them.
Hashtag high
heat. My assignments. I killed that dog.
What about the outs on the bases now? Who's our NPB leader?
The Tootblong. Leaders, the Tupelo Kings, as we reported earlier in the season, they were the Rakuten Eagles, who early in, I think, the first 3 weeks of the season were losing like 15% of their base runners to being on the bases.
It seemed like it was a hobby for them, like something they would do in the meantime.
Exactly.
Well, I got this double here, but I'm going to make an out at third because I'm tired of running.
Like if we run enough, they'll get tired of throwing.
Yeah, I want to go back to my defensive spot and just stand there because I'm tired of running.
Well, I think if the runners run enough, that maybe the infielder's arms will get tired. Okay, so the current Kings are the Buffaloes. The Oryx Buffaloes are losing about 7% of their runners on base. The Marines are 6%.
And they're second?
The Eagles are about 6%, a little behind them. The teams, and it's a Pacific League thing.
Oh, really? Making outs on the bases.
and Why that is a good question. I don't know the answer, but I'm going to guess. I've included stolen bases in there. So
right.
I've included a ton of runners just thrown out after they've had a base, and pickoffs and caught stealing. And I think the Pacific League is high because they basically try to steal many more bases than the Central League teams do. So
all right.
That's probably that. The three teams that are we are most cautious on the bases, let's say.
Okay.
And this goes against what I saw today. Well, the most cautious would be the Yakult Swallows, which is, I guess, if you've got Coco Ballantyne and Murakami out there running the bases, I'd be cautious too.
Right.
2.6% of they're losing about half as many as the leaders. And then the Yomiuri Giants are also pretty cautious. And then the Hanshin Tigers, who are not cautious at all. They're very daring on the bases, but they're good at it. So,
they're good at it. Well, that makes a difference too, you know?
I mean, they're like, they're like commandos on the base. You know, that they've pulled off the best base pass commando raids I've seen in a couple of years this year. We got one today, which was kind of fun. So, power to them.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. That was fun. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about interleague play. So, you notice when I joked about the fact that when I joked with Brandon about the fact that they get to play against Central League teams, he didn't say something like, oh, well, you know, it's not that easy, or they're professionals too, or, you know,
he
didn't say anything like that. He just laughed. And I think that's the way a lot of us look at it. So going into, through today's games, the Pacific League, and today the Central League had a really good day. They had a 5-1 day, and I can't remember the last time the Central League had a 5-1 day. Not that I've logged all those things in my head, so that doesn't really make that much.
You know, they have a game. They'll sweep all six.
I haven't seen the sweep in a long time. No, I don't remember if they got one last year,
It's pretty much they lose. You know, they either split or they lose four or they lose five. And then they'll split.
Right. So, right now the Pacific League leads 20-15 in terms of the head-to-head wins. I think the Hawks have, how do we phrase this now? Because before they were winning the title, and then now they said don't say it like that. So they have finished on top. They finished on top in interleague seven times already, and they started out with 5-0 and lost for the first time today to the Carp. So it's good that the Carp, the best team or the team that's leading the Central League, finally
beat. Don't get me started on stupid sponsors
rules and all that
gosh.
Stuff. We're not supposed to say that they win.
I know
it,
you're not
whatever.
Supposed to say. You're supposed to say something that makes no sense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So right now, even though this kind of surprised me. I thought, wow, 20 and 15, that's kind of interesting. But the thing that got me, I thought, well, maybe the Pacific League's like scoring a lot more runs. Because I know in the past, the Pacific League has just eaten the Central League up in runs scored and runs allowed.
As Brandon said, yum, yum, yum.
Well,
let's
exactly.
Go. Bring on those little Central League parks.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Through today's game, the Central League is outscoring the Pacific League 151-132.
Mm.
So take that, Pacific League.
Yeah, and they're still five games down. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
It's like winning the popular vote but losing the vote, yeah.
Losing the electoral college.
Losing the electric, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we've seen that. We know that can happen. But, you know what, honestly, I was joking with somebody on Twitter, and I said, I just hope the Dragons don't lose every game in Interleague. And they managed to win on Friday. Yeah, they beat up the Eagles on Friday, but they lost the series. I think they outscored them. That's proof there, right? They outscored them in the series, but they lost the series 2-1.
Yeah, and so through Friday's game, the Eagles were the only Pacific League team with one win.
Yeah. Well,
but now they're even.
Now they're even. Yeah, it doesn't take that long. We haven't had many games here. Like, that's why I want to see the interleague session go a little bit longer. I think 18 is just too few. But anyway, it's 3 weeks.
Last thing I want to add on that, when I was chatting with Stefan Romero of the Oryx Buffaloes on Saturday, and he was complaining about his team's lack of offense. I don't know, he wasn't complaining. That's me putting words in his mouth.
Yeah, he was mentioning. Yeah.
He was lamenting the fact that they don't have more than a couple of big hitters on the team, unlike the two or three Japanese guys who can really hit the ball hard, he said, on other teams in the Pacific League. And I said, but you can't do it. I said to him, but you can't do it all yourself. And then what does he do? He goes out and does it.
That's what you talked to him on Saturday, right?
He goes out and does it all himself. So in two games this weekend against the Yakult Swallows, they were rained out on Friday. The Oryx Buffaloes scored 9 runs, and Romero drove in 8 of those.
Including all 5 on Saturday and a victory.
5 on Saturday and 3 on Sunday. So I also said don't do anything silly in the outfield because he's got neck issues, but he's playing in the outfield in the Central League parks. And then he tries to make a big catch against the wall, the outfield wall on Saturday.
Stop it.
Stop, put on the brakes, dude. Because he's just the nicest guy in the world. And, you know, the more he's playing, the better off we are. So, you know, stay safe, bud.
Yeah, please do. And to finish my thought on the Dragons, I was going to say they are bad in interleague, but they've never finished with the worst record in interleague. Their lowest finish, and that came in 2013 and 2015, has been 10th. So it's always an exercise in futility for the Central League, but the Dragons have never been the most futile.
Okay, but they're exercise.
Yep. All right. So there are a couple of notes I wanted to get to, one in particular. There's some players who are coming back from a combination of injury and illness, and 3 of them I wanted to point out. Akira Nakamura of SoftBank is coming back from some nervous disorder and some injuries, and he played and got a double in his very first at bat, and it was an RBI double. And then Scott Matheson of Yomiuri, he's back after dealing with a lot of injuries, but also an illness that he has, and he has had success. He had a successful debut against the Eagles up in Sendai, and then he came back home to pitch on the Tokyo Dome mound for the first time in almost a year.
Yeah,
and got out of his inning then on Saturday.
I saw. Really looking forward to talking to him. It's been
really
too long.
Yeah, I actually wanted to talk to him, but since I was having Friday I had lunch with Dave, the MPB card guy, so I wasn't able to go into the dome as early as I wanted to, so I didn't get a chance to say hi to Scott that day because I had to wait to get the interview with Brandon. But next time I go there, I definitely want to talk to him. And then Fumihito Haraguchi of the Hanshin Tigers is a cancer survivor, and he came back, and his first at bat, I think, was a
RBI
pinch hit
double.
A pinch hit RBI double, and then he won today's game for the Tigers with a walk-off hit. So that's really good. So it's good to see those guys back.
Absolutely.
No matter what team you play for, if you're battling injury in addition to if you're battling illness in addition to injury, that just makes this game, which is already difficult, even more challenging. And to see these guys fight through all that kind of adversity and come back is inspiring.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I mean, it's a wonderful story. I mean, Haraguchi, I mean, after he got the hit today, his manager was in tears. It doesn't get much better than that.
You make Yano
cry, it's something.
I was going to call Yano a big softy, but he's a little guy. He's real slight, so he's a little softy. But he's a really nice guy. And I did see that interview and the post game as well. And just, wonderful stuff. And that kind of stuff brings us together, whether it doesn't matter where you're from, what baseball world you come from or whatever world you're in. If you see guys pulling for one another and supporting each other in all these, not just the times of success. If he'd have gotten up there and just struck out, I think it would have been, it's just great that he's back playing and able to play baseball. I'm talking about Haraguchi in this respect, but all these guys, just the fact that they're able to go back out there and compete is inspiring. So I'm not going to worry about their results, although they will. I'm sure.
Yeah,
they
will, one more. Teams. Yeah, one more strikeout, and you're back on the farm, dude. Rehabilitate down there.
Yeah, and what was your note?
This past week, and Shinosuke Abe hit his 400th home run.
That's right. And I saw that. I tweeted that out.
Right. And today, on Sunday, June 9th, he hit his 401st home run. And he has now hit home runs off of 229 pitchers.
Which Ouch.
Is the most by any hitter in Japan. So he's punished 229 different guys, left a mark. And that's the most. He had been in a tie. And the next most punishing hitter was Tuffy Rhodes.
Figures?
Hit his home runs off of 228 pitches.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, I watched Abe hit that home run today, and I didn't think much of it. I didn't have the sound on, so I wasn't listening, but... it seemed like it was a big deal, so now we know why.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody knew that.
Okay.
And I thought it was just because I liked Abe, because he's such a great guy. So, okay.
Yeah, he's still very popular. In fact, there was, I think maybe you saw it, someone on Twitter wanted me to, well, I assumed they wanted me to help them get a jersey signed, but they didn't get down. I couldn't find them, and we couldn't hook up, and I was going to try to get Abe to, well, get somebody to sign, to have Abe sign it. But I couldn't hook up with
it. Sign one of your Abe jerseys, man.
I don't have any Giants paraphernalia. I apologize.
Oh, okay. Apologize. John's house looks like a warehouse of, like, MTV goods.
You don't know. You've only been here when I was moving. You haven't been here since. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. This one's an MP3, and it comes from Mike in D.C. I love how that rhymes.
Hey, John and Jim. Back here in the States, Alex Cora and a number of Boston Red Sox players are skipping the customary championship trip to the White House over disagreements with the Trump administration's handling of disaster relief efforts in Puerto Rico after the hurricane there. That had me wondering, what are some times when MPB and Japanese politics have intersected? Thanks, and keep up the great work.
Okay, all right. Jim.
Politics and sports. No politics,
well, baseball.
Sports in this house. Well, okay. Now, Japan has kind of an interesting parallel to the president inviting the champions to the White House, and that is the ruling party at one point created essentially the Japan's Medal of Freedom. It's the People's Honor Award, you know, which is essentially like the Medal of Freedom in America. And it was basically something they created in order to honor a famous baseball player so the prime minister could have a photo op. So the Sadaharu Oh was the first recipient when he passed Hank Aaron's career home run total. But Ichiro Suzuki has turned it down a number of times.
Mm-hmm,
it's just one of these political things. A lot of people turn it down because they just don't want to be part of the politics. So it's very much like the president inviting people to the White House. Although in the past, people didn't usually turn it down because it didn't used to be a very political thing. It wasn't the political thing that it's become. So, but in Japan, it was much more political.
Right, and the thing I wanted to stress is that there's just a difference in cultures here. So I remember in the 70s, I think some teams I'd be watching on TV, and Howard Cosell would be interviewing some championship team, and then the president would call or something
Sure.
And we don't have that in Japan. That's the prime minister is busy doing prime ministerial things, and not watching sports.
Yeah, he's got to go play golf with somebody, you know, some business people.
Yeah, or something. But so we don't see the prime minister throwing out the first pitch at games a lot. We don't see them inviting championship teams to the prime minister's residence. And so that's just a total difference in culture right there.
So dynamic there. Yeah.
So the only thing that I had ever seen was the same thing that you mentioned, which was Ichiro Suzuki turning down the People's Honor Award. And it's reported three times. That's what I found.
Yep.
But I don't know that was even politically motivated. I just think he's not interested in the award at the moment. Maybe when
he's just a kind of, well, I mean, he likes to be, he likes to be recognized for what he does. But the fact is, this is less of a recognition for what he does than that he's famous, and some politicians want to have their picture taken with him.
Yep, yep. So I don't think it's all that motivated by him having different views or different stances from the prime minister. I just think it's about him.
I think probably he might not know who the prime minister is, or he might not care who the prime minister is.
All right. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for the question, Mike.
Yep.
Anyone else who has a question, please send it by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on the Twitter page at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat, or hit us up on this Facebook page. Jim, I'm going to have to meet you soon and hand you this book, because this Wayne Grosick fan book, because the more I have it, the longer I have it, the closer that the kids get to it, they might tear it up. So we don't want that. It's almost in mint condition. We don't want them to rip it apart.
I don't want that to go to the fate of my DNA Baystars cat.
Okay, bud.
This damn dog food. Okay,
so we got to hook up soon. All right, so we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark, and see you at jballallen.com.